Boom.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? So this is a long time, and it's been a while, but we are finally here, and I want to tell everyone we are going to a new season. This is going to be season two. So this is either going to be the last episode of season one or the first episode of season two. We're going to start doing new things. Like, I probably won't announce the episode every episode. I think we know those by now. And just little things, new intros, try to get some music on here. But we're finally back. I'm trying to push these episodes out each week again. But this week, we have someone amazing in this space. And I want to say to the world, because this man is super smart and an amazing person. But Scott Co-Miners, how are you doing, brother?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
I am doing much better than the first time we talked. But man, I'm here. I just want to say thank you for everything that you've done for me recently. You've given me some great advice even before this podcast. You know, it's been super fun just being able to pick your brain and learn all the things that you've been doing, man.
No, and thank you. I mean, first of all, I don't know if you know this, but right, you were one of the very first people I was aware of as I was like really getting into, you know, sort of Web3 and NFTs and consumer applications. You know, listened to a bunch of the early casts, but also just like, you know, your like positive energy and like friendliness and like, you know, super welcoming attitude on Twitter is like, you know, one of the things that like really got me to like stick in the space. So it's a huge honor to be a part of your podcast. You know, not going to lie, like I was like hoping we could make this happen, you know, from months ago. Like, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, I've got to be on Sit Down with Sniper. So I'm thrilled to do it.
No, man, that means the world to me. You know, I started in this space a while ago, and I know I've seen you around, and I remember back when Crypto Ray Rays and Dose was doing their thing. It was such a freaking huge thing that you put one in your profile picture. And not only that, you were also with Vinny Hager. I think this is when I really saw you doing something. You had made a puzzle with Vinny.
Yeah.
And you're very good at making puzzles, and we'll talk on that later on. But I had just saw, for one, how intelligent you were. Two, you want to talk about me being welcoming. I thought you were super genuine, man, super just so open to the idea of just different things, you know, NFTs, just Web3. And I was like, you know, this is definitely someone I want to be around, someone I want to learn from. I knew you were older than me, so I was like, this. Not only do you have the wisdom that I don't have, there was just so much there. And I was like, you know what? Scott is definitely someone that can give me guidance. So I'm really happy that I was able to be someone that you could look, you know, and see in the very beginning. That makes me, you know, you've been here for a while, man. You've been here over a year now, right?
I know. And so have you, right? Like tomorrow's the anniversary of the first episode, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so
wild.
The
surreal thing about Web3 is the time moves infinitely quickly and infinitely slowly at the same time, right? You know, the last week feels like it's been a year, and yet it's also stunning to imagine that it's been like more than a year since we've been doing this stuff.
I know, man. I look back and I see some of the people, some of the projects, and just how much the space has grown. Sometimes I'm like, dude, I was just in LA last week with these people. I was literally just seeing these people start what felt like last week. And then you look at the calendar and it's like, wow, that was a whole year ago. That, I mean, you did the puzzle with Vinny almost a year, if
New
not
Year's.
Over New Year's. So it's literally coming up on a year that quick. And I feel like it was just a couple weeks ago we did the puzzle and I claimed it. And it was beautiful as well. So Scott, I do want to jump in and say, so, you know, I've had many people on the podcast, whether they be founders, artists, but what I really wanted to do for this season and going forward was grab people from Web3 as a whole. It didn't really matter what you did. It didn't really matter if you were someone that was gifted with a pen or pencil or just someone in the space that was an observer. So for you, you know, you are a professor at Harvard, very, very smart person. But you make these crazy puzzles. What is it with you and puzzles?
Oh my gosh. I love puzzles. I've been solving them essentially as far back as I can remember, certainly, you know, writing and solving them as early as elementary school, but then very, you know, a lot of it very seriously in college and grad school and afterwards. And the type of puzzle I particularly love is these puzzles where a big part of the puzzle is figuring out what you're supposed to do. So unlike in a crossword puzzle, like where you know what you're doing, right? You got a crossword grid, you've got some clues, you're filling in the grid according to the clues, and maybe you're figuring out something unusual, right? Like there's this really famous crossword a friend of mine wrote where some of those, you know, squares are have circles in them, and you notice that the circles could be like heads or tails. They work with a T or with an H, and like all the clues that cross through those circles have two possible answers. So like, you know, and so it's like coins flipping heads, tails. So like some crosswords have a little bit of like discovery in them, but mostly when you start solving a crossword, you know the structure. The puzzles that I really like to solve and to write are these puzzles where the puzzle could be anything, right? It could be like a bunch of numbers. It could be, you know, a list of book titles or like with the piece with Vinny, like just a piece of art, right? It's just an image. And you're told it's a puzzle and you might be given a little bit of information, like, you know, the answer is a word and you have to stare at it and sort of like gradually discover and like, you know, sort of, you know, put yourself into the head of the creator a little bit and figure out like, how do I unlock this? Like, how do I turn this image into a word somehow? And that like, that sort of journey of discovery and the aha moments and the excitement of it, both I've always really enjoyed experiencing myself, and even more I enjoy helping other people experience.
Okay, so whenever you do these puzzles, I definitely want to know this: how we have NFT Twitter, what people would call NFT Twitter or crypto Twitter.
Yep,
is there a scene or community for puzzles?
Oh yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. There's okay. A huge puzzle scene. first of all, I mean, there are conferences and conventions with different themes, right? There's like there's a crossword puzzle solving championships. There's a, you know, there's Recon, which is like this, the Reality Escape Convention, which is a convention for escape room creators and proprietors. Like, so there are like big events, but then there's also, annual competitions in the, you know, in this, you know, which are sort of combination competition and reunion, right? It's like, you know, you see all of your puzzle friends and you all try and solve puzzles. The biggest one of this format I've described each year is called the MIT Mystery Hunt. It's held every January over MLK weekend at MIT. And, you know, you solve it in teams of anywhere between like 4 and 400. And you know, there are so many puzzles, right? It's going to take an entire weekend for a team of like, you know, 20 to 80 to 100 people potentially. And the really cool thing about this one, there are many cool things about the Mystery Hunt, but two really cool features of the Mystery Hunt. I'm being a little bit like that Monty Python sketch.
Oh, you're fine.
Like, are two things about cool things about the Mystery Hunt are one and two and three things. So the, first of all, the puzzles aren't just standalone. They come in groups, and the answers to the puzzles in a group form what's called a meta puzzle. They sort of combine and interlock together into their own new puzzle. And usually the answers to the meta puzzles form what's called a meta puzzle. So all the answers to the group puzzles again form like another group puzzle or maybe multiple group puzzles. And every so often there's even a meta puzzle. So the puzzles sort of keep, you know, the rabbit hole goes deeper and deeper, right? Like, you know, sort of, you know, you think you've solved it all, about, or you know you haven't because you've done this event before, so you know that there are layers. But like, you know, you sort of feel as if you've accomplished, like, you know, sort of all of these like individual tasks, and then you discover that they were beautifully interlocked in a way where you couldn't see the structure until you had like solved a bunch of them. The other thing that's really cool about the Mystery Hunt, or another thing, I mean, it's been one of my favorite, you know, things of the year ever since college, when I first participated in it. But another really cool thing about it is they have these incredibly creative and elaborate themes, which feature into the designs and structures of these puzzles. And so, you know, one year, you know, the theme was, you know, an office murder mystery, and then you gradually realize you're in the Matrix. You know, another year, And so, you know, you're like solving these mystery puzzles, and you're gradually solving these other puzzles that sort of pull you out of the world. And another year, it was I'm somehow grasping for all the video game ones. There was a year where it was a series of video games. The first round was themed around Mario, and you solve a world 1-1, a world 1-2, a world 1-3, and the meta puzzles for world 1-1, the answer was some type of mushroom. For the second one, it was some type of flower. For world 1-3, it was some type of star, right? Mushroom, flower, star. Okay. And then there's a boss battle, meta puzzle, which was an airship. And then you expect you're going to world 2-1 because it's Mario. And to date, it's been set up as Mario. But in fact, you discover that Bowser was working for Dr. Wily. And the next round was Mega Man. And the round after that was Zelda, and then you know Ganondorf was working for the Russians, and it became, you know, I think it was the Russians, you know, it became you know, sort of civilization, and then Katamari Damacy, and then it turns out that all of these villains together were working for GLaDOS, and it was really a portal themed hunt. And when you got to this very last step, you realized there had been clues to portal the whole time. And so it just has this like majestic like sort of combination and recombination, and you're never quite done. And you're doing it with a bunch of your best friends, right? Like I play on a team with a bunch of my college friends, you know, that sort of comes back together. Like everyone reconvenes every year for the mystery hunt. And it's really, you know, it's extraordinary, right? It's a community activity. And you're probably already like, you know, listeners are thinking, huh, that sounds kind of like an NFT community, right? No, it's a community activity where people get together to do this extremely esoteric thing that draws on everyone's like unusual skills and unusual knowledge and background very, very intensely. And like it uses every part of your person, right? Like I am, for example, I have since childhood known all the lyrics to We Didn't Start the Fire because I really liked We Didn't Start the Fire. More generally, I like Liszt songs, right? You know, Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, Joe DiMaggio.
Yes.
So in these puzzles, it's often useful, right? Yeah, it's like in these puzzles, you didn't know you were going to get like really bad Billy Joel covers on this podcast episode, did you?
Oh, like, I love it.
So in these puzzles, it's often useful to have a string of like related words with a well-defined order, but where the words are not obvious, right? Where you sort of have to figure out what they are without knowing it necessarily, without sort of just being able to look at it and be like, oh, you know, if it were January, February, March, you're like, okay, great. The next one is April. So it's actually very common to use the list of words from We Didn't Start the Fire as, you know, one of those ordered lists because it's ordered. And if you just see like Walter Winchell and Santayana, like you don't necessarily like if you're not a We Didn't Start the Fire nut like I am, you don't necessarily think like, oh, I wonder if it's referencing that Billy Joel song. But so I have like, you know, I'll be like standing in the solving room and somebody will be saying like, Red China. Why is Red China the answer to this puzzle? I'm like, Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray. And they're like, what are you saying, Scott? I'm like, Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, South Pacific, Walter Winchell, any of these words in the puzzle? And they're like, oh, wait, like, what are those? They're like, what are you talking about? I'm like, does it have any relation to fire? And they're like, oh yeah, it's the Pokemon, it's the like red Pokemon puzzle round. And you're like, fine. Or the fire, rather, sorry, the fire Pokemon puzzle round. You know what I mean. And I'm like, yes, okay, it's a We Didn't Start the Fire puzzle. Like, that's the order. Go look up the lyrics. And then, you know, I'm like, wow, my job here is done. You know, stretch, like, you know, like off to get a, you know, another glass of tea or something.
The best part about this is I'm a huge Office nut. And the Ryan started the fire. That's the only thing. That's the only thing that keeps running through my mind the whole time. I can't even grasp. That's the one thing about puzzles is I love doing them. And when I say puzzles, I mean like Sudoku. Maybe a little Wordle here and there. Although it is different now that you know they took over. But I just don't understand that. Like, I can't look at a puzzle like that. That's why whenever it comes to you, and even the one that you made with Vinny, it was rough there for a second. but it really opened my eyes to looking at things totally different. I think you're the reason why I started playing Wordle and the other word games, because I'll always see you tweet out your success, and I'm like, damn, this dude's good. Like, you play like Pundle.
No, no. The person who's really good at Wordle is my mom. She is incredible at it. I'm like, okay.
I've never got, I don't think, under four, three, just for a Wordle. Anybody that gets them in one or two, yo, hats off. Never me. Hats off. I have friends that are really good. But I want to ask you, Scott. So I've seen you in the Web3 space for a while now. We've said almost over a year now, if you're not there, almost. What is it about NFTs and Web3 that really drew you here and
kind of great question.
And kind of kept you here as of now? Because as of right now, there's a horrible bear market, but we do still have those that care about what's going on, and we do still see those in the scene. So what was it that brought you here?
Oh my gosh. I mean, look, it's first of all, the story of how I ended up here is kind of hilarious and relates to puzzles. So I'm a market designer by training, right? I study the design of markets and marketplaces, and I'm constantly thinking about and trying to understand new market technologies, right? Trying to understand like new ways of doing transactions. Like my course at HBS is called Making Markets, and it's literally about how markets fail and then how we can, as entrepreneurs, and policymakers, like, you know, reorganize the way markets work to make them run better. And so, you know, in that capacity, I've been aware of crypto, you know, more or less since its inception. Like, one of my undergraduate and then graduate thesis advisors was was one of the earliest Bitcoin miners. And so, like, I've been, you know, gosh, I wish I had been as into it as she was. I mean, like, she like rigged up a server and like was mining Bitcoin, and you know, and I was like, wow, this internet cash stuff sounds totally silly. Whoops. I know, right? Like, but so I've been aware of this stuff for a very long time. And in fact, like NFTs, even I was aware of like back in the early days of CryptoKitties. Like I literally had a conversation with a colleague about like starting an experimental NFT project in 2017, for a research idea. Like, we sort of like, you know, we're interested by the concept and sort of like, you know, spent a good hour like thinking about like, oh, maybe we could build a thing that did X. Again, you know, whoops, that was, you know, that was a missed opportunity. But like, I was aware of this stuff, but I have to admit, I was really blind to its potential. And what happened, you know, the way I actually got into it, like I had been involved in I'd originally been blind to like sort of all of crypto's potential. I was actually on record as a pretty major skeptic. And then a very good friend and now like frequent collaborator of mine, Christian Catalini, convinced me to help him and many other people think about the design of Libra/Diem, what became sort of what was Facebook's cryptocurrency initiative, with this, you know, idea of trying to build global transaction infrastructure for the world. And like, and that was extraordinarily compelling to me as an application. It got me really interested in crypto and trying to understand like, okay, now I believe this stuff really does have really meaningful like global consumer applications. What are they? But I still missed this NFT thing. But I was writing this puzzle column for Bloomberg, and we we tried to do columns on things that were timely and of interest to Bloomberg readers, and crypto is about as like down home plate as you can come from that, right? Like, so in early 2021, I did a column, you know, a puzzle column about the, you know, sort of themed around the Beeple sale. And then in the middle of the summer, when the PFP projects were starting to take off, I did a puzzle column that was themed around the PFPs. And like, you know, we told this sort of fake story, you know, like, you know, Bloomberg, you know, Commenters Conundrums has been collecting, you know, PFPs secretly for like, you know, for weeks, you know, to help us decode where they are and so forth. It was a decoding puzzle, easy, not too difficult. But I mentioned in that article three specific projects, right? I mentioned the CryptoPunks and the Bored Apes, which has just been written up in the New Yorker. And then SupDucks, which I just found as I was like browsing around. I was like, oh, these are like, you know, these are super cool. And some people from the SupDucks community reached out to me immediately and were like, hey, we read your article. We really think like your personality type is the type who would get into this. Like, why don't you join our Discord? And I'm like, are you serious? And they're like, yeah, totally. Like, it's cool. Like, check it out. like, you are like an NFT person. I'm like, I don't know. So I joined this, you know, I had a Discord account. I was in one Discord. Ha. You know, I joined my second Discord of my ever, like, my life. Like, you know, says someone who just hit the Discord cap again.
Oh, man.
I know, right? So I joined the SupDucks Discord, and it was magical, right? Here was this community of people from all over the world with a shared, like, fascination around these, you know, around these characters, you know, that Frankie Nines had created, and a shared, like, community bond that came through, like, community markers and signifiers. Like, there was a channel that was just people saying sup all the time. Sup, 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 any hour of the day. If you were, like, you know, having a bad day, you could log in and say sup, and, like, other people would say sup back. And it was super cool. And, you know, it's funny. I have co-authored an article with Christian Catalini and Ravi Jagadisan in which we said the following thing about NFTs. We said that NFTs are, in many ways, they're sort of like more powerful or sort of like from early stages than cryptocurrencies are. Because cryptocurrencies, you know, sort of, you need widespread acceptance. If they're going to be a medium of exchange, they need to be, you know, sort of widely accepted before they take on that value, right? If you're going to, like, have a currency, you need to be able to exchange it with a lot of people. Or else you're not going to carry it and try and, like, trade it to people. Whereas NFTs, they sort of, so cryptocurrencies sort of spin from the outside in, right? Once they're very widely accepted, they become instantly super useful. Mm-hmm. NFTs spin from the inside out. You take a very small quirk of community members who all agree that the thing is valuable. And as they together co-create more and more value, this spins out into, like, more people wanting to be part of the community, also being interested in the NFTs, and sort of, like, more and more people entering, and the group of people becoming even more, you know, sort of exciting and productive.
Now, we,
and, you know, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead, go for it.
No, I was going to say we dove on communities a lot. Do you think you being in the SupDucks kind of made you stay here in NFTs after?
Oh, it was transformative.
Okay.
So, yeah, like, so I, you know, I'd never owned a crypto asset. Like, I'd written papers about crypto, but I literally never owned a crypto asset. But, you know, the SupDucks helped me get my first ever, you know, my first ever NFTs, like, you know, figure out what the heck this is. How do you get a crypto wallet? Like, how do you do all this stuff? One of my, like, you know, sort of now closest friends in the space, you know, Far, and helped me, like, literally, like, you know, I was still waiting for, like, you know, to be able to actually transfer my crypto. There was a duck I really, really wanted. He sniped the duck, and, like, you know, we did the trade a couple days later. Like, you know, so, like, I got this, like, instantaneous, like, sort of pulse of community from everyone. And then, as a market design economist, I became fascinated, right? Like, suddenly these NFTs, which I had, like, you know, noted, like, literally written an article that talked about, they were suddenly real, right? I had this experience of digital ownership, and I saw all the ways in which they were enabling fundamentally new types of transactions, right? Creating property rights over digital assets, like, serving as these memberships to communities and, like, access tokens and things. And so the next, right? So then suddenly it's, like, intellectually fascinating, and it's confusing to me. And, like, when you're a professor, like, when the more confused you are, the more you want to learn. And so, like, you know, the next thing I did, and like, it was obvious to me that this was, like, a huge part of our future. And so I did, you know, sort of two wild and crazy things. One of them is, I decided I, like, needed to write an article just to, like, figure out what the heck this was, but I also was never going to be able to do this on my own. So I reached out to Steve Kaczynski, whom I met through the SupDucks. Like, we met in a SupDucks Twitter space, what's quacking, and said, like, hey, this is totally ridiculous, but, like, do you want to, like, try and write an article about, like, how NFTs create value? And he was like, oh my gosh, I'm so down. We wrote it while he was at NFT NYC, like, you know, like, in and out of events, like, we're, like, flipping drafts back and forth. And then it came out in HBR, like, right after NFT NYC. Harvard Business Review, right after NFT, you know, NYC. And, like, you know, that was, like, a magical intellectual exercise and a magical collaboration. I mean, like, Steve is just so incredible. Like, you know, one of the, like, quickest thinkers and, like, most animated and, like, loveliest human beings you've ever, like, met, or, you know, much less had the opportunity to work with. and also just like so brilliant. And like, you know, and so I got a massive download of knowledge from him. Similarly, like, you know, I went and read, you know, Bobby Hundreds' book, This Is Not a T-Shirt, like a huge amounts of like this sort of like these like thought leaders in the space who were trying to really like come to grips with like, what is this stuff? And like, why is this happening? Why is it happening now? Like, I went and read and like learned all as much as I could of that, just, you know, just to get up to speed, right? It's like, and Through the Looking Glass, right? The Red Queen runs, you know, at top speed just to stay in place. You know how it is in crypto, right? Like, you have to run at top speed just to stay in place. Absolutely. And I was coming from behind, right? I had to like really learn a lot. And then the second wild thing I did was I knew that my students were going to need to understand this, and I was scheduled to teach Making Markets in spring 22. And so I committed that I was going to teach a 2-week focus module on crypto and Web3 with zero course materials at that minute, right? I had like none of it. I didn't understand. I barely understood this stuff, like, you know, much less was prepared to teach it. But there was no better way to like learn something than to like force yourself to teach it, because in order to convey it to somebody else clearly, your understanding has to be as sharp as you can possibly make it. And so I went off on this like, you know, learning journey. And in the meantime, right, and there's this incredible back and forth exchange, right? Like, as I'm like doing all of this like learning and scholarship about this, I'm meeting new communities. I'm seeing new ways in which NFTs can be used and getting involved in them and making new friends. And so it's this like lovely, like, you know, sort of, you know, back and forth between like my academic pursuit and like trying to better understand this world and like figure out how to make it better and you know, like, you know, help take it up to 11 or like do what I can to like realize the potential for the world, or to help realize the potential for the world, right? I get a tiny sliver of it, but I'd like to achieve the maximum sliver I can. And then I am making so many friends, right? Like, it's not an accident that I like hit the Discord cap, because I'm seeing all of these different communities and all their different interactions. And like, I become really good friends with the chain runners, like Flashwrecked. I wrote an article with, you know, on CC0. And like, I learned CC0 through like, you know, talking with him tons. And like, again, it's another one where I didn't get it initially. And that was so exciting, right? Like, again, and right. So you asked why I'm still here during the bear market.
You're good, man.
I mean, you know, I'm still here during the bear market, socially, because I still have tons of friends in the space. It's still, you know, it's still like, you know, just incredible community, incredible people like you, you know, like the Supducks, like the Chain Runners, like the Thingdoms, like, you know, Adam Hollander, who like, you know, founded like Hungry Wolves and co-founded White Sands. Like, I've made so many friends. And we all together are on the vanguard of this incredibly fascinating and very real, and I do believe it's a very real technological movement. And like, so the other reason to be around in the bear market is this is when you build, this is when, like, you know, you try and understand the answers so that like you can, and again, it's, you know, this is when you build as an entrepreneur. This is also when you build as a scholar, right? Like, you try and understand, like, okay, where are the fundamental, you know, technologies and features and concepts that are going to carry through and like really transform? Like, you know, if we like to believe that Web3 is going to change the way people interact with the internet and like give people custody over their digital assets worldwide and like, you know, make it possible to bank the unbanked and like all of these things, we like to believe that in the sort of best possible Web3 outcome should be possible. We've got a lot of work to do to figure out how to get there. And this is the time to understand those challenges and build the solutions. And like, you know, bull or bear, it doesn't really matter, right? The technology is still there. And the people who like really are part of this vanguard and wave, who like the people who are actually building the stuff, they never left because they weren't here for the hype in the first place, right? Hype is fun. Yeah. It's actually very distracting when you're an entrepreneur, right? Like, to be clear, but it's still fun, right? Like, hype is fun, but that isn't the reason, like, that most of the people who are still around, I think, got into it, right? Like, that may have been how they noticed it, but like, there's something really special here, both in the technology and even more in the people.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's so many things I could dive on. I mean, this podcast could literally be several hours. But it's funny because you mentioned communities a couple of times in there. And
yeah, absolutely.
I do believe what you're saying is true. The people that genuinely wanted to start this, whenever they did, whatever that may be, and are still here, whether it's last week, 2 years ago, I feel like they genuinely wanted to build something and wanted more than just profile pictures. I mean, of course, that's fun. It's always fun to make a lot of money. It's always fun to have the hype, but it does distract you. Like with the podcast, for example, I kind of did what you did. I didn't go in with zero knowledge, but I had only had maybe a couple months of knowledge. And that was just the basic rundown of kind of what NFTs were. And I really wanted to use the podcast as a way to learn alongside other people and ask people questions that we all wanted to hear. And I was just like, yo.
And to teach, yeah, right? You're both learning and teaching, exactly. Which is like even more spectacular.
And that's what I loved about it is that if someone didn't know, well, cool, we could learn together. Or maybe if I meet someone who don't know down the line, well, I can refer you to the podcast. And it's super simple to pick up. You don't really have to understand fully in and out, you know, what the blockchain is. It's more or less the people in the space looking to push it forward. Yeah. And that's why I said this season, I really want to get all different kinds of people, whether it's a professor or it's an artist or a founder, because everyone has some kind of input or some kind of advice from whatever aspect they're at. So I do want to ask you, though, because there's so many different things. You being a professor now, you've been around crypto, you've been around these NFTs now for a little bit. Are you hearing people in your circle, like other people at Harvard or other business people, are you starting to see more people gravitate towards NFTs, or do you think it's still a long way away from mass adoption?
Well, so it's funny that that's a very well framed question, because my answer was going to like, you know, sort of carry both of these points. So I'll tell you, the case study, two of my colleagues and I co-authored on the Bored Ape Yacht Club is being taught all over the business school. And we're finally almost ready to do the, like, you know, general public release. And I'm hoping other people, you know, it'll be taught elsewhere. But like, we're teaching it everywhere from our executive programs to this year, it's in the first year marketing class. And like, the reason for this, I think, is that whether people are like excited about this or super skeptical, like everyone is recognizing that this is something that is in the world and is real, and that, like, you know, business leaders of the next 20 years are going to have to contemplate and understand and like be able to like interact with, right? Like, you know, whether you think, like, whether you're a Web3 maxi or like a Web3 ultra skeptic, like there's a ton of energy and value currently focused in Web3. And like, this is something our students need to like understand and form opinions on so they can like go out and be leaders. And so in that sense, there's a lot of interest, right? There's a lot of like people want to understand, and they come in with very different priors, right? Like when I taught the case, the first time we taught this case, I opened with a question. You know, there was a poll the night before, and you know, I opened with this sort of 2x2 question. The poll is like, suppose you could have bought a Bored Ape, you know, day of mint at mint price. Would you have done so? Yes, no. And today the Bored Ape, you know, price is like whatever it was, 90 ETH or something. Right. Like if you could sell it, like, you know, if you could sell it today, would you do so? And like, naturally, the vast majority of students started in the like, you know, absolutely would not have bought, and absolutely I'm selling right now box. And you start with them and you're like, okay, so like what's going on here? And they say things like, these are ridiculous. They are pictures of apes. They have no flow, no cash flows. I don't know how they support this valuation. Like, what is this asset? Like, it's not even an asset. Like, and then, you know, their classmates, you know, at HBS we teach via the case method, right? Classmates start arguing with them. And there's like always a couple people in the room who like actually own something, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there was like a couple students in you know, in the class who like have crypto wallets, like hold NFTs. I think none of them had apes, but they had nice collections. And they start saying like, no, like there are quote unquote cash flows here, sort of, right? Like you get dividends, like you get a mutant serum. And then people are like, is a mutant serum a dividend? Like, I don't know. And someone's like, well, they're currently selling for 20K. And someone's like, but it's like, but like, you know, it's another like random image on the internet. And like, you sort of talk your way through like, what are all the different facets of the value of this abstract token? And how is it like, where does that market value come from? Like, how is it attaining value? And then I say, okay, great. Like now that we understand what an NFT is and to some degree, like how it attains value, the different ways it can create value, what problems can this solve? And what's fascinating is even the skeptics, like even the people who started in the like, I got nothing, this is so silly camp. After that initial conversation, they had lots of great ideas for problems it could solve, right? Someone was like, you know, event ticketing, right? We, you know, this is a nightmare, right? There's this whole secondary market where you don't know whether, you know, when you're buying a QR code ticket, you don't know if someone sold it to three other people. And you're like, yeah, like, you know, unique digital asset, proof of ownership. That seems, you know, you control the asset. It seems pretty good. You know, someone else is saying, you know, maybe we could use this for educational credentials. Like what if my like diploma could be an NFT? I'm like, yeah, MIT is actually doing that. Sorry, be an NFT. And it was like, yeah, MIT is actually doing that.
Wait, they are?
And like, yeah, MIT has been giving out digital diplomas for a number of years, maybe like 6 or 7 years at this point.
Oh, and technically, I mean, you can't give your diploma to someone else. So that would then make...
No. And these are blockchain coded. Like they give out a blockchain copy of your diploma credential.
Wow.
It's on a side chain. I forget what chain it's on, but like they started experimenting with blockchain diplomas like a long time ago.
Wow.
And like, you know, and then you say, okay, but so great. We go from this is all nonsense to like, maybe like, to like people have different opinions, but at least we understand why some people think it's not nonsense to, okay, maybe this technology can actually do some stuff, right? It is solving real market failures. And then I say, but is this ready for prime time? And like, everyone's like, oh my gosh, like, absolutely not, right? I made them all set up crypto wallets if they didn't have them. They're like, this was the scariest thing, right? Like, you know, I gave them this like security briefing document. It was like, before setting up your crypto wallet, like, you know, watch this video. Like, do not ever type your seed phrase into any computer ever, right? Like, and they're like, this is like not what you expect from consumer financial services. And like, and it's true, right? In order for this to actually get to mass adoption, it doesn't just have to get really compelling applications. The applications are getting there quickly, right? Like, NFT ticketing is an extremely compelling application, and digital tickets is a gigantic fraction of the, what is it, like $30 to $40 billion ticketing market. Like NFT tickets are real. They will happen. It's just a superior technology. But in order for the average person to hold an NFT ticket, the average crypto person has to have some crypto wallet they can use intuitively and that has protections of the type you're used to with other sorts of internet accounts. And so, you know, there's like applications will drive adoption, but they will also along the way drive improvements in infrastructure, right? If you're like running a really serious NFT ticketing program right now, you have to also be thinking about like which chains and which wallets are consumers going to be able to use. And you need to be like encouraging the development of chains and wallets that consumers can use and interface with intuitively. And so like there's all of this like infrastructure and application sort of swirling together at once. And so part of what I teach and sort of one of the points we leave often in the class is that like at the same time we can see this incredible potential, but we could also see so much work to be done. Right? It's like it's the early days of the internet all over again, right? Like, you know, we're writing in HTML 2.0. And you know, and we really need like CSS and, wow, that was a dorky and probably not totally accurate metaphor, but you know, whatever.
I understood it.
Awesome.
That's just me though.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, I understood it.
No, it's true. And our audience will probably get it too, which is probably what we need. but yeah, so it's very exciting and And I think, and I hope at least that the students take away that it's exciting and that they should be, you know, in some part, you know, in some fraction excited and in some fraction skeptical of where we are right now, right? Like there's a long way to go before we've, you know, before we ever start wondering about Web 4, much less Web 7.
Oh, yeah. No, most definitely. I do want to, okay, so like I said, I definitely feel like, Scott, we're going to easily do a part 2 and part 3 in the future, man, just because I feel like...
I love it. I'm looking forward to it.
Just because I know you have a lot of knowledge, and I still have the 5 questions, and I do want to let everyone know listening in, these 5 questions will probably switch up after this episode. So like I said, it'll either be, this will either be the last episode of season 1 or the first one of season 2. But regardless, I would love to refresh these 5 questions because as everyone will hear, they are a little outdated and I just feel like it'll be good to really freshen some of them up. But before I even jump into those, I did want to ask you one last thing. So we've talked about, you know, the communities and everything. You've been in this space, like we said, a while. What is one thing from the outside looking in? We know you're not a founder or anything. What is one thing you would love to see happen or change or something you feel is needed for this space in order to get closer to mass adoption or just for more people to understand? Like we've seen people like Reddit, Nike, not call them NFTs, but digital collectibles. Mm-hmm. That was a really big step, I feel like, to getting a lot of users here. Is there anything that you've kind of thought about? Like, hey, I think maybe if people start doing this, that would really open some eyes.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, that step, like Steve and I, I should plug. Steve and I are writing a book.
There you go. Plug it.
You should get on our email list so we can announce, you know, send you the announcement when the pre-ordering is live. Book about NFTs.com. Easy to remember. Kaczynski and Commoners. But so one thing we say, at least in the draft of the book, and I suspect this will make it to the final version because it's very much, it's very true. You know, nobody like talks about a QR code ticket as a QR code ticket, right? They just call it a ticket. And no one's going to call an NFT ticket an NFT ticket. They're just going to call it a ticket, right?
Like, exactly.
Very quickly, we should be reaching the point where the underlying technology, like people have an intuitive enough understanding about what this NFT technology is, that they just interact with it as if it's another part of their life, right? Like, it's like a web page or like, you know, a QR code. It's just like a technology that facilitates a bunch of other stuff, right? Like it's an ownership record that moves around, like, and it has potentially like, you know, add-on features. And so that move by like various brands and others to like just start labeling these as collectibles or objects or, you know, tickets is very much right, right? Like, you know, we get much closer to mass adoption when the rails of the technology are less visible. But along with that, the other thing that like, you know, and we could do an entire episode about sort of transitions we could see in the space and stuff, but another like easy one, and Bobby Hundreds wrote about this recently too. When you think about digital collectibles, even just the collectibles use case, collectibles is a multi-hundred billion dollar market globally, right? The collectibles market is huge. But the vast majority of collectibles are not like what we have right now in the NFT space, right? They're not, you know, hundred, you know, much less like $1,000 or $10,000, like ultra limited editions. Like, and those exist, right? Like, you can buy a $10,000 or $100,000 like Star Wars toy, right? Like, that is a category.
Yep.
But most Star Wars toys are like $6 to $12. Like most trading cards are like $6 to $10 a pack. And you know, back when we were a little bit younger, they were $3 a pack, right? I still got those Magic the Gathering cards, like Odyssey Block $3.25 or whatever it was.
There you go.
And so the mass market digital collectible NFTs need to be things that are accessible for everybody. And again, that comes in, there are two pieces to that. One of them is they should be in much higher numbers and like, you know, much cheaper, right? Like, you know, higher supply, lower price, even given larger demand. And secondarily, again, they need to be accessible at the technology level, right? They need to be things that people can actually get to, which means they need to live in like intuitive interfaces that people can really use. And we need to do a lot of work to bridge digital divides and get people access to those technologies.
Okay. I like that, man. I mean, and I don't know why it popped up. Whenever you talked about collectibles, it made me instantly think that Hot Wheels is doing a new NFT with Flow.
What?
I just bought a case of Hot Wheels last week. I'm a big collector. As you can see, I got Legos and stuff. My Millennium Falcon over there.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Dude, I love collecting. But no, you make some great points, Scott. And that's why, I mean, before we jump over to the questions, that's why I said we definitely need to do another episode, if not another couple episodes in the future.
Love it.
Because I genuinely love, and that makes me like so much more inspired to go and just learn about NFTs, because you're opening up to me that, I mean, there is a whole bunch of people out there that I look at NFTs like, yo, this is super simple. Like, you know, this isn't nothing right. crazy, but I've been here for so long. It's not like that for right. everyone that jumps in, and there are people
totally
studying this. So, dude, we're definitely going to talk more about this and what you've seen, especially as we keep going forward, because I can only imagine another bull market. But jumping into the questions, I want to go some of these, you know, it's Web3 related. Some of them you can just answer in general. Number yep. one is, though, what is the most important thing to Scott in his life? So what's the most important thing to you, my man?
Jeepers. I mean, like this is excluding family, or do I include family?
Oh,
like,
you
I mean,
can.
It's definitely.
You can include family.
Okay, I mean, so definitely, like, you know, my family is just, I don't know, always has been, right? Like,
absolutely.
But if I expand a little bit beyond that, like, the thing I get the most like fulfillment out of in my you know sort of. I don't know, like my life in the world is helping other people achieve their maximum potential, right? Like I walk around and like I see almost like on everyone's forehead, like a wonderful, like maximal person they could be. And like, I've just, you know, the greatest privilege of my job and my existence has been the opportunity to like help a bunch of people, like a little, you know, sort of like realize like a little bit more of their maximal self. And so like, and if you ask just like in the abstract, like what is incredibly important to me, it's, you know, it's my family. It's and that's like an incredibly important value to all of them too, right? Like we're very close and we care tremendously about each other. We bring all of our hard problems to each other. But then like I also like in my interaction in the world, right? I've had the privilege to have the opportunity to like sort of, I don't know, to, you know, have like my students and my friends and my colleagues and like all of these people, like all of these, you know, all of these wonderful personal relationships. And I've been so privileged to like be able to help some people like become even greater and yeah, I don't know. Sorry,
I like
got really
that.
Sappy, but that's...
No, man, that's cool. And the thing is, I know you mean that, and I know how genuine of a guy you are, because even we were talking one day, and I was like, yo, me being a big art person, I know Harvard has some art there at their museum. And I had said something about wanting to go and see it, and you immediately responded and were like, oh, bro, we can make that happen one day. You know, you're always
absolutely
down to help someone. I've seen you on Twitter do that multiple times. Like, you're always down to I'm so mad we didn't even talk about A16 or none of that. But that's why I said you got to come back, man. There's so much stuff that we could really dive into. But number two is. And I feel like you'll like this one. What is an obstacle that you have overcome to help you get to you are today?
Oh my
Some
gosh,
of these
so
are hard
many.
Hitting. Man.
I don't even. No, I know. And like, look, I've heard the podcast. I should have prepped. Gosh, I don't know. I mean, you know, it's funny, like I don't know, we're in this very like emotional zone right now. especially with the you know, the pre-convo.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
You know, I used to like, you know, so I'm on the autism spectrum, and like, I used to have trouble making eye contact with people because it literally made my brain feel like it was on fire. Mm-hmm. And like, it's funny. I'm not sure I've ever talked about this publicly before. Like this is like Sniper, you are like,
love
you
it, know, brother. Love
we're
it.
Just like so on this wavelength that like we're going very deep very quickly. So apologies to all the listeners who thought they were tuning in for just like a bunch of like sup. And like, it was, you know, really hard. But you know, it's really funny. One of the biggest values in my family that my parents always impressed upon my brother and me was they wanted us to be able to like talk to everyone in the world, right? Like any person, like every single person like has a fascinating story and like, you know, and is like super interesting and like super excellent. And like, it was like always like, you know, and you know, we'd travel, like they would get to know all the staff at the hotel. And so we would get to know all the staff at the hotel. Like we learned this like idea of being able to talk to everyone. Turns out eye contact is pretty important in that.
Yeah.
And like, so like from a very young age, like, you know, my parents sort of said like, you know, look, we're like this eye contact, you gotta do this eye contact thing. And so I literally like spent hours staring in mirrors, figuring out how to do it. How to make my like brain burn less. And like, you know, it's funny, right? Like I think of it as, I don't know, like, I guess it was an obstacle. But it's one of the things I'm sort of most happy that I figured out, because again, all of these like, you know, connections and interpersonal relationships, like, you know, it would be much harder if I couldn't ever like, you know, look at somebody.
I will say this, man. So there is for one, every time that I ask that question, it's such a hard hitting question. I always tell people, you know, they can answer it how they want and they always give me a very respectful answer. So for one, I definitely applaud you and respect you for sharing what you did with us. Not only that, it's pretty funny. One of my great friends that is very close to me, I'll never forget the day he revealed to me that he had Asperger's. And he revealed it to me like I wasn't gonna love him or something. And I was like, okay, so we going inside to play Call of Duty or what? Like that,
right, exactly,
that
like,
didn't bother me. Like it didn't. But the thing is, I love that, man. And I love that whenever people share their story, because I'm a firm believer of you shared it for a reason. So I'm a very, very even more big believer that someone listening to this needed to hear it. So I think,
absolutely.
I thank you for sharing it. But I also have met people where I always thought that like whenever I talk to people, I had to look them in their eyes. So someone told me the trick that if you just like look right here, that it will trick the other person to think you're looking them dead in their eyes. So now when people talk to me, I just look right here and I'm like, yeah, I just, but I mean, other than that, man, I think you do a hell of a job talking to people and I would have do better than me. So, I mean, I love it though, man. I mean,
no, I don't do better than you, but I, you know, I'll take a close second. How about that?
No, I mean, I appreciate it, man. The whole talking thing, I always found out that my biggest problem, people always told me was, hey, you talk too much. And I'm like, you know what? I can use that for my own experience. You know, if I talk too much, let me do a podcast then. And then I'll have the perfect place to talk too much and really help others be a teacher and get my little workout in for talking. But no, I mean, thank you for that. And I guess number three is this is going to hit you. What is one thing you want to do before you get too old?
Oh my gosh.
You're still young, man.
Yeah. Goodness, what is the thing I want to do before I get too old?
And I think too old is just a really nice way of saying before you die. So if that helps you.
Gosh. That is is a really great question. I mean, does it have to be a unique item, or does it want to, can it be like a category or something, right?
It could be anything. It could be, I want to skydive. It could be, I want to find a four leaf clover. It could be anything. Web3, general life.
I mean, four leaf clovers are awesome. I did find one once and I was like lucky for the next week. It was amazing.
My aunt is so good. So many times we've been at family gatherings and she just, oh, look at that. And just reach down and pick one up. I'm like, how do you? She's like, it's really a weird gift that she has. I guess if she had superpowers, hers would be finding four leaf clovers. And it's weird.
Incredible. Oh my gosh. I wish I had that superpower. You know, I mean, I guess like, it's funny. It comes back to that earlier answer, right? Like, you know, before I get too old, I want to help as many people, you know, become themselves as I possibly can.
Absolutely.
I want to, like, you know, help as many people as I can, like, you know, level up and really, like, you know, come into themselves and be as awesome as humanly possible. And yeah, I mean, the cool thing about setting a goal like that is, you know, it's basically you want to do as many of them as you possibly can. And so there's always more you can do. And, you know, if for some reason you get struck by lightning in that thunderstorm and you can't grab your cell phone quickly enough, like, you know, actually you probably don't want to grab your cell phone if you're being struck by lightning, right? That's probably metal. Like, so probably like, you know, grounding rod or whatever, but like, you know, if you do get struck by lightning, like you still did okay, but like hopefully not getting struck by lightning anytime soon. And yeah, I hope to help a lot of people be awesome.
I think you will, man. And not only that, I mean, for one, you being where you're at, like with school and being able to help other people learn about NFTs, Web3, what's going on, give them guidance, point them in a general direction. I think that right there makes you cool as hell. And I know in 20, 30, 40 years from now, people will be able to look back and be like, yo, I'm really happy I took that Scott Wood class, or I'm really happy Scott talked to me about this, because I mean, I might not have a Bored Ape, but I definitely have a lot of knowledge that is probably more valuable than just owning one Bored Ape. So you're killing it.
I sure hope so, because I don't have a Bored Ape either. And so, like, you know, all I've got is the knowledge.
Yeah, literally. And the thing was, I was around for Bored Ape Mint. I saw him and still skipped because I didn't really like them, you know. I thought that,
yeah. Exactly. didn't get the aesthetic. No, like, you know,
didn't really like them. Really liked the money that they were worth about 2 weeks later, but in time being, no. I ended up meeting the artist, you know, though, and she's a wonderful woman. I met her in LA, Seneca, and
super cool.
Yeah, she's very nice. But that, I mean, they're doing great over there. They're a very good footprint in Web3 of what to do as a business. I mean, I think for the most part, they've been carrying themselves pretty well. And it's the, might not be the OG, like I guess CryptoPunks would maybe be, but I mean, look at it. They own them now. So Yuga Labs, I guess we should say Yuga Labs as a whole is a good, entity in this space. But number four, this is why I have to mainly change the questions, because this one's going to be like, oh, damn. And everyone will be able to tell at what time I wrote this question. But if I gave you 200 ETH and it had to be spent on NFTs, what are some big purchases or plays that you would make? Credit, I made this whenever 200 ETH would maybe have got you like two Bored Apes. Now it might get you five. Right. But what are some plays you'd make, man?
So this is hilarious, but this one I literally I have no answer to. we'll have to leave it for people with better wisdom than you and I.
That one is tough. I mean, 200 ETH, I don't even know what that is right now. I don't know the floor price of 99% of the projects. I saw that question before we started and I was like, you know what? I could probably give you 10 ETH and I still wouldn't know what to buy. So, but other than the question, Scott, we've been going for an hour. I do just want to say before we hop off here, I've said it 2-3 times, but I'm really looking forward to doing more episodes with you.
Absolutely.
You are an amazing guest, amazing person to talk to.
And you're an amazing host and human.
Yo, I appreciate that, man. And thank you. Like I said earlier, thank you for all the guidance that you've given me and all the help. And before we get off here, is there anything that you kind of want to end on and say or just let the people know?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, first of all, it's a really good question to end on. When I trained in ethnomusicology, they tell you that at the end of every interview, you should always ask, is there anything you would like to add?
Oh, nice.
And so I often, as my anything you'd like to add, reveal the fact that this is the recommended last question that they teach in graduate ethnomusicology. To now be like a little bit, more Web3-ish focused and stuff, like, you know, I sort of want to say thank you to you and to whoever else is tuning in, right, for being a part of this utterly surreal moment that we're living in, trying to build the future of the internet. And like, you know, for being a community of in many ways, like the tightest knit, like, you know, sort of network of friends and cross advisors and like, you know, and scholars and degens, you know, all at once, right? Like, it's really like an extraordinary honor to be a part of this. To me, it is an extraordinary honor to be a part of this and to, you know, to meet people like you. And so thanks.
No,
QED.
Absolutely, man. And I'm not going to lie, whenever you said that that's like the question you're supposed to ask, it made me so happy because I've never took a single class. All these podcasts are, after this, it's stopped and then uploaded. There's no editing besides maybe the voice level. This is all just, I did this one day in my mom's basement. 26 years old. This is just something that I really wanted to do to help other people and help myself learn all together, be a teacher and a student at the same time. So just having your words of encouragement, like that means the world to me. And as someone that I look up to, not only for intelligence, but just as a genuine human, it means the world that you've even recognized me and allowed me to interview. So it's an honor for me, man. And everyone listening in, I just want to let y'all know that I really butchered Scott's last name earlier. And I said, co-miners.
Who cares, dude?
I'm so sorry. But yo,
dude, go check him out. So not an issue. Like, I can't even believe we're like closing on this note, but we're going to be like cracking up.
But I mean, definitely check him out and check out everything he's doing. Like I said, he's been involved with some great people in this space, and I definitely, definitely, definitely recommend going to see his Twitter and what he does. So please, that's what we'll end on that great note. And just everyone, I hope y'all have a great week and keep tuning in. So we'll see y'all next week and have a good one. Scott, stick around for me so I can ask you some stuff. But
I will.
Y'all have a great night. Awesome. And we'll see y'all. Peace out.